This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Good morning to you. Hello there. How's it going? Or good evening, depending on what time of day you're listening. We are glad to have you with us hanging out. It is the Chuck Oliver Show. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. Busy day. A lot going on. And glad that you could be here to hang out with us for a little bit. Among the things we will be touching on, of course, we've got the NFL draft. We've got some big transfer news for an SEC school. Got a lawsuit. Seems like there's always at least one of those going on these days. And so another lawsuit filed in the never-ending ACC-FSU struggle. A lot going on. But I want to start particularly with something that we have tonight that I'm not 100% sure we're going to have real often again. It's not something you have to go way out of your way to think about and appreciate, but I do think it is something worth making sure that we take the time to mention. Tonight, in the NFL draft, at some point early on, maybe not top 10, but before the middle of the round is over, more than likely, someone will step up to the podium in Detroit, and they will say, we select cornerback Quinyon Mitchell, Toledo. And they'll roll the video, and there Quinyon Mitchell will be. Star cornerback for the Toledo Rockets. A MAC player on his way to the league as a first-round pick. And the reason I say we may not see it again is because of where we are in the sport, this might be the last one. Not just from the MAC, from any school like Toledo. This might be it. At least the way that things are currently constructed. And think about it. Over the years, there have been some great players that have come from that conference. Ben Roethlisberger came out of that conference, was a first-round pick. You know what he turned into, could almost certainly go to the Hall of Fame. Khalil Mack coming out of Buffalo, a guy that I don't know if he'll be a Hall of Famer or not, but he's had a really great career. There have been a lot of great players that have come through the MAC over the years, and that was always one of the things I thought was fun about the draft and about college football was that you would have simultaneously these guys that are the most high-profile people possible. A Jaden Daniels coming out of LSU, Heisman Trophy winner, played in the most attention-getting games you could imagine. Everybody knows Jaden Daniels. Whether you think Jaden Daniels is going to be a great quarterback, an okay quarterback, whether you think he's a bust waiting to happen, you know all about Jaden Daniels. If you're watching tonight and you're any kind of college football fan, you've got a pretty strong opinion on what you think about Jaden Daniels. What's your opinion about Quinyon Marshall? You probably don't have much of one because you probably didn't see that much of Toledo. And I always thought that was kind of cool that you would have the debate about the guy that you've seen so much that you feel like you know all his stuff, good or bad, versus the guy that you kind of have as a mystery guest. Think about Josh Allen. We know what Josh Allen's turned into. But when Josh Allen was drafted originally out of Wyoming, you had a huge question mark about Josh Allen. Josh Allen was a guy who had not really played many games against high-level competition. And when he hadn't done particularly well. But how much of that was Josh Allen himself? How much of that was the reality that he was out there with a bunch of guys that wouldn't have even been on the practice squad against some of the teams like in Iowa that he was playing? They just weren't the same level of player. So how much can you expect a guy to elevate his team if it's just him and he doesn't have other resources? And there was a huge debate about a guy like Allen. There's a big debate about other guys through the years. Steve McNair was an FCS player, an incredible one. But how's that going to translate as a quarterback to the NFL? Will he be able to pick up on the nuances of NFL defenses and NFL athletes? Who can say? That kind of argument has gone on, a bit of a staple part of NFL college discussion forever. The problem is now a guy like Quinyon Marshall is not going to stay, or Mitchell rather, I don't know why I'm trying to turn him into Marshall, is not going to stay at Toledo. Not likely. Because why would you? Toledo's never going to have the kind of money to take a guy who's a first-round pick and get him the kind of NIL necessary to keep a guy like that. It's not going to happen. Even if they had all their boosters pass the hat, one booster, one big-shot booster at a place like Texas or Georgia or USC could say, come on, guys. Who are you kidding? I can write a bigger check than the entire Rockets booster club combined. This may be it. Last year, there was not a single player taken in the first round from FCS or Group of Five schools. Not one. This year, of the guys who've been invited to the draft, the only one that is not from Power Conference schools is him, Quinyon Mitchell. That's it. And you look at that and you just say, hey, man, what are the odds we're going to see more of that? Now, it could happen. It could be that there's a guy, if it does happen in the future, what it's almost certainly going to be is going to be a guy who's a late bloomer. And we see that even at power schools where there's somebody who's relatively quiet. An example this year would be Xavier Leggett. Xavier Leggett at the end of last season for South Carolina, he had a couple of good games. But he was not somebody who anybody had as a high-level draft pick going into this year. His final year at South Carolina, he exploded, had a big statistical year, and now he might have a chance of going in the first round, probably still second. But the point is, he completely changed his status in one year. So there may well be somebody playing in the MAC or the Mountain West or whatever who's that kind of guy, who for whatever reason, just you know, a new scheme features him more, or he gains 20 pounds of good muscle, really buckles down and has a great final year and turns into a terror as a pass rusher or something. And he gets drafted because of that. But if you do it early, if you are a Khalil Mack type of player, you're not going to be staying at Buffalo. If you're Mitchell, you're not going to be staying at Toledo. You're going to be going somewhere else because they're going to make it financially basically impossible for you unless you are just absolutely the most loyal guy ever to play college football, they're going to make it basically impossible for you to rationally say, I should stay here. I should do this. There already are lots of good reasons. Even before the current environment, there were lots of good reasons why a player in the MAC might think, you know, SEC or Big Ten might be better for me. Better competition, maybe better coaching. Not a guarantee. There's some good coaches who worked at small schools. Once upon a time, Nick Saban was in the MAC. But maybe better coaching, almost certainly better resources, just better for training table, better for weight room, better for a lot of things. There were already reasons to think about it. But there was also the reality that if you transferred, you'd have to sit out a year, and you might, by the time that you get back on the field, you might have lost something. Maybe it's better to just stay out there, keep playing, and get to the NFL. And now that there's no delay, and on top of that, that teams can just openly put out offers there without having to even really have a fig leaf at this point to pretend that it's not just, hey, here's what it's going to take financially to get you there. We're willing to offer it. I don't know that we're going to see this anymore. I think it's kind of a shame. I really do. I think it's bad for the lower levels of the sport, obviously. But more than that, I think it's bad even for those of us who just liked the night of the NFL draft or the lead up to the NFL draft, having some debates about whether or not a guy from a smaller school could do it. This Brian Urlacher guy from New Mexico, we sure he's a top 10 pick? I mean, I know he's a great athlete at his level, but are we sure that's going to translate to going against high-end NFL talent? Turns out it did. But that kind of conversation was always fun. It's not going to really be that way anymore. The closest thing we're going to have to, quote-unquote, smaller school conversation is probably going to be schools that a guy was the star player, maybe the featured player in an offense for a school that plays in one of these mega conferences and isn't one of the best. And so you go, well, did he put up the big numbers because he was at Minnesota? Would he have put the same numbers up if he was at Ohio State because he'd have more guys competing with him for the ball? Is he as good a player as he looks like statistically? That's not the same thing. And it's not going to be anywhere near as fun. So tonight, when they say Quinyon Mitchell, he goes across the stage, just take time to note it, because it might very well be the last time we see something like that. And again, last year, Allmack, he was absolutely somebody who had options and just decided to stay loyal. He's quoted, in fact, in the piece I read about him. Talk about, I just try to stay loyal to those who are loyal to me, because he didn't have an easy path to get in at the first place, had some issues along the way, and so he stayed loyal. It's admirable, not likely to be repeated. I think it's a shame. As we mentioned earlier, there's a lot of news going on. The draft is a part of the conversation today for sure. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we're going to check in and hear from down in Baton Rouge what the stories are there. They have, of course, a quarterback in this conversation, multiple receivers in the conversation. It is a big night for LSU talent, as it almost always is. We'll also check in on the search for some defensive tackles down there, because all of a sudden, if you look at it, there's been some guys that people thought were going into the portal that changed their mind, didn't. The market for defensive tackle, there are more schools trying to land defensive tackles than any other position. It's pretty clear right now, and the supply is not what they originally had maybe thought it would be, which means the demand and the amount of pressure to land some of these guys that teams really thought they might be able to fortify your defense, man, there are going to be some battles over the next few weeks from some teams trying to beef up on their interior line, and LSU's one of them. So we'll talk about that coming up in just a bit as well. Plus, some big transfer news in the SEC. Keep it right here. It was the Chuck Oliver Show on a Thursday.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show, Heath Klein in for Chuck today. Glad you could be hanging out with us on NFL Draft Day. Plenty going on beyond the draft, though, on the college level, that's for sure. And this is not going to shock anybody. As soon as the word came out that this was the direction things looked like they might go, you kind of suspected they'd finish the drill. But it is now official this morning. Reports coming out. Jaden Rashada will be transferring from Arizona State to Georgia. So Georgia gets the quarterback that they were looking for, that extra arm to be a part of the conversation. Not so much that they needed one for this year, although with injuries, you never can be sure. Can't ever have too many talented quarterbacks. But this is really more about the future conversation. What happens after this year? And as it has increasingly looked like, for whatever reasons, that maybe Gunnar Stockton, despite a heavy dose of recruiting hype, just hasn't shown them enough that they're sure that he's who they want to be the next quarterback there. Once Brock Vandegrift left, it was pretty clear that Kirby Smart intended to add another arm. The question was, again, would it be a veteran guy just to be an extra backup with some experience for this year? Would it be a younger player to be somebody to compete for the job in the future? And it turns out that is the answer. So in the span of the last week now, they've added a quarterback to be the young quarterback coming in the class of 2025, and Ryan Montgomery, the kid out of Ohio. But Montgomery, even though talented, is not necessarily somebody who is projected to show up and be a contender for a starting job right away, certainly not at a place like Georgia. So now you have another person with some useful starting experience, 3 starts last year for Arizona State, but a guy who is considered a high-end talent, 4-star level talent, not probably 5, although Florida, for whatever reason, went kind of crazy and was going to pay him like he was a 5-star, not just a 5-star, a mega 5-star. But Rashada now gets a chance to come to Georgia, spend a year, learn their system, learn the talent, maybe get in some game situations, because you expect that Georgia will probably have success enough this year that They can get some reps for both Stockton and Rashad at times. So he gets a chance to be ready. And then in 2025, either one, Rashad has already just clearly passed Stockton on the depth chart, in which case you assume that Stockton doesn't wait till after spring to transfer. Or two, it's a battle in spring, and one of the two of them is probably on his way out after spring, unless Kirby Smart and his staff can manage things in such a way that they both feel like they've got a legit shot. But the chances that one of them won't feel pretty sure that he's either in the lead or he's not probably isn't going to happen. It's a tough thing to sell. Once upon a time, remember, Urban Meyer and his staff were trying to sell Joe Burrow on the idea, look, yeah, it looks like Dwayne Haskins is the starter, but we haven't said that, and come on back. And Burrow's like, no. You guys are going with Haskins. I can tell. I'm not waiting to find out for sure in the fall. And so he left, and probably a pretty good decision. So if you're Kirby Smart, maybe you just added your 2025 starting quarterback. Maybe you just added a guy who's going to push Gunnar Stockton that extra little bit to make sure that he's even more ready for you in 25. Whatever it turns out to be, it shouldn't, unless Beck gets hurt, have a huge story to tell about the 24 Bulldogs, but it will be a story everyone watching the Bulldogs in 2024 keeps an eye on whenever those opportunities do present themselves in the third quarter up, 20-plus points. When do those guys get in? How much effort is put into developing one or both of them? Who's in first? Do they try to keep it equal? Those things are going to be fascinating to track. But again, for Rashada, the bizarre start to the career aside, he's now in a really good place. I have no idea NIL-wise what he will make at Georgia. I think it's safe to say it's more than he was supposed to make originally at Arizona State. The word was there, he got zero NIL to go there. It was his dad's alma mater. And after the fiasco with Florida, just go somewhere and get his career started. But the thing that was always such a shame about the Jaden Rashada story was that by all accounts, he genuinely wanted to play for Florida. And then when he wound up at one point stuck going to Miami, that was supposedly, a dollars deal. Then no wait, now he's going to go back to Florida after all. No wait, now that's not going to work out because of that deal, that ridiculous $13 million-plus deal that they agreed to and didn't have the money for whatever reason when they agreed to it. Whoever did that, again, that one day there will be a more full explanation for what happened there because it was just so bizarre, all of it. Why would you offer that level of deal in the first place? And if you were offering it, why in the world would you offer it if you didn't have the money to back it up? It's just a strange, strange saga of how that played out. But a lot of people projected that stuff on the kid. And everything about the story has always, if you've paid attention, been more, there's other forces involved in that conversation. He actually just would have been happy going to Gainesville playing for Billy Napier. But that's not what the game is anymore, it seems, just to be as simple as, hey, I'd like to play for this school and this coach, so I'm going there, and we're not going to worry about the other stuff. That just doesn't work that way, especially for these quarterbacks with the resources that people want to throw at that position. So I don't know how he feels about Georgia, if he genuinely has wanted to go there the whole time, or whether or not somebody's telling him this is what he's got to do. I hope for his sake it is a chance to get back to a higher level program than Arizona State looks like they can be for the next couple of years, and that it's where he genuinely wants to go at this point. I hope that's what it is for the kid, because I always felt bad for him with the way that stories were reported about this whole saga. It just never seemed like he was getting to be the main character in his own story, and that just stinks. Meanwhile, if you are a Georgia fan, last night you got a story that wasn't as positive for you as the Jaden Rashada news. All of a sudden, the word came down that Kristen Miller was maybe looking at going into the transfer portal. He put out some word on social media. That's what he was going to do. This morning, he's like, yeah, never mind. Quote from Miller here to On3. Quote, I have unfinished business with my brothers. I'm 100% locked in. Go Dawgs. And again, this is the part that's not fun. Maybe last night was just a weird moment. Just everybody's had those when you go to college, you get a little homesick or whatever. You just say, hey, maybe I want to change. And the difference is that if you're me and you go to Mercer University, which I did, got a scholarship, went to Mercer, not an athletic scholarship, just a scholarship. But I got a scholarship. I went to Mercer. I'd never been to the campus before I agreed to go there. It wasn't for me. But nobody cared, other than my parents and a couple of friends, whether or not I was at Mercer or anywhere. But if you're an athlete and you have the kind of moment that I had, that a lot of people have when they pick a school and they realize, this may not be the right fit. If you have that moment and you share it publicly, especially, then people take it really seriously. Maybe that's all it was. Just I don't know. Maybe somewhere else would be better. But now the climate, the mindset is, okay, somebody said, how much will make you feel better? How much? I don't know if Georgia did it or not, but it's a shame because that is always the vibe when something like this comes out now, is that that's how it wound up getting resolved rather than necessarily just being what a lot of kids that are not athletes have when they consider their options and what might make sense for them. And one other piece of information from the transfer portal, this one does look like it's going to go through. In the case of Alabama, it seemed like the exodus in large part had been stemmed. Now Bama is going the other way. They're adding some talent, but at least one more player that probably would have seen some time for Alabama looks like he is going to be in the portal. James Bronkermeyer, the center, has entered, a guy who was a fairly highly touted recruit for them when they landed him originally out of the state of Texas, but for whatever reasons, apparently has decided it's time to move on. He has gone into the portal with a do not contact designation. So what that means is typically when a guy does that, he's saying, I already know my school. So he's asking people, don't bother me and don't waste your time. I know where I'm going. Have not seen the report yet on where that might be. But again, as noted, Brockermeyer is from Texas. So you would think maybe getting closer to home, state of Texas school might be a logical place for where he may be headed. Regardless, though, where Brockermeyer is not apparently going to be is on the offensive line for Alabama this year. Certainly not going to say that's a devastating loss for them, but this is someone who would have been at least expected to be a contributor, and you never, ever like losing guys who have experience on the offensive line. And in their case, that's what they're dealing with, is losing somebody who at least would have been a possible contributor, maybe a starter, but at least a contributor on that O-line with a lot of development. So tough break there for Alabama.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Show continues. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. King will be back in the saddle tomorrow. He's up at Harris Cherokee, going to be doing some stuff today for the local station he does his show for, 680 The Fan, here in Atlanta. So had to be up there today, and so he'll be back in the studio tomorrow for a reaction to everything that goes down in the NFL Draft Day 1 here on Thursday, and of course everything going on all the time in college football. But this is the one day where the two worlds mesh more than any other. In fact, I was just looking at tonight who's going to be on stage. This is a chance for all these guys to strut their stuff a little bit and make that recruiting pitch subtly, but make it to anybody who's watching. So tonight, Ryan Day, Lincoln Riley, and yes, Brian Kelly going to be on ESPN's presentation of the NFL draft, because it's a big night for LSU. And joining us to talk about that right now, Hunt Palmer. You can hear him in Baton Rouge on ESPN 104.5, and he joins us here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Hunt, how are you, man?
Great, Heath. How are you this morning?
Doing all right. I appreciate you making the time. This is a big day for LSU, really, every year. I mean, I can't remember ever a draft where there wasn't at least somebody from LSU that people were saying, hey, look out, this guy's a stud, this guy's an athlete. Even when the program wasn't where it's been the last decade plus, there's always athletes at LSU, everybody knows that. But this year, with a quarterback who's a Heisman Trophy winner, with some elite-level receivers, I would imagine there's even more interest than usual about what's going to go down tonight.
Yeah, it's crazy because of the fact that LSU struggled so badly for basically a decade at the end of the Les Miles era to throw the football and catch it. And then to think that you had the Burrow and Chase and Jefferson team and then the success that those guys have had as first-round picks in the NFL, and you think, well, we may never see that again. And then you turn around, and then 4 years later, you're going to see it again. You're going to see the Heisman Trophy-winning quarterback going probably in the top two of the draft and probably two first-round wide receivers. And so it was a wild fall to watch. The defense didn't necessarily uphold its end of the bargain, but to celebrate that LSU offense is pretty easy, and there'll be a lot of that in South Louisiana tonight.
And we will bring it back around to this year's team in a second, but just building off of that, you saw Burrow, and you just made the obvious comparison that people have made between two Heisman winners at the same school in a short period of time with some elite receivers around them. I felt like Joe Burrow could not miss, even though him going to an organization as historically inept as the Bengals, you felt like, hey, they're going to test the theory, but I still really did not think he could miss. Why is it when I watch Jaden Daniels, I'm not as sold that he can't miss as Burrow? Am I just nuts? Am I dumb? Why do I not feel quite this? I'm not saying he won't. Why do I not feel he can't miss the way I did about Burrow?
I think if you're trying to knock Jaden, he doesn't have a cannon for an arm, not that Joe really did, and he's thin. And he's thin and running around a lot, and that can create some problems. As far as what he did in college, I don't know that you can do it a lot better. He got on a roll after that Florida State game this past season, and I never thought LSU was going to punt again, quite frankly, because he was so efficient. He was so quick in his decision-making. He was so accurate. His deep ball was so good. And then if something wasn't there, they just – defensive players could not get to him. Defensive linemen had no chance at the college level. Neither did linebackers. And then he got into the secondary, and there's all that room out there, and he started making explosive plays in the running game. Now, how much of that is available at the NFL level? I mean, Lamar Jackson does a pretty good job of it. So it's not – I don't know that he feels quite as – locky as Joe Burrow, and I use air quotes there, but I would feel really good about it if I took him.
We've all seen, if you've paid any attention, some of the borderline like Looney Tunes cartoon level hits that he has taken when he runs. I'm sure LSU's coaches said, Jaden, for Pete's sake, man, slide, get down, protect yourself. You know, we like yards, but we want an intact Jaden Daniels. So why did that never translate, and do we think it will on the NFL level that they'll be able to tell him, hey, man, we got to get you out of bounds or down, but we cannot have you getting destroyed by NFL linebackers like this?
Yeah, if you look at a lot of those that are on the highlight reels, and I'm sure you'll see them tonight when they're looking at some negatives with Jaden because, you know, he got a lot of time between picks. Most of them are very early in the season. Most of them are Florida State, which is the first game, Ole Miss, which was, I think, game four. You don't see a lot of those hits late in the season against Alabama, Florida, and Texas A&M. He did a really good job once Halloween hit of really curtailing that a little bit. So, yeah, it's got to be a point of emphasis because he's just not built to deal with those dudes on Sundays the way that he was trying to at times. It's difficult, I think, for a guy who's been the most athletic player on the field his entire life through his Arizona State career up into LSU to turn off the fact that he might be able to make that next guy miss too. You got to realize it pretty quickly. I think he did a better job of it late in the season this past year, and Brian Kelly talked about it very openly in press conferences, like, yeah, he's got to figure out a way to get out of bounds or get on the ground, and he did, and I think he'll do more of that come on Sundays.
Hunt Palmer from 104.5 ESPN in Baton Rouge with us here on the Chuck Oliver Show. So it was taken as an article of absolute faith. Basically, all of the conversation through last season was Marvin Harrison Jr. will be the number one receiver taken in this draft. He's this elite-level playmaker. We all know about his dad. There's just no question that's the number one receiver. Hunt, I know you've been tracking it just like I have. that is no longer an article of faith. It's not even close. It seems like there's a lot of people in the NFL who now believe Malik Nabers might go ahead of Marvin Harrison. You've seen a bunch of great athletes roll through there at the receiver position. There's you mentioned Jefferson. Jefferson was not taken in the first half of the first round. He was like pick 22. What makes Nabers so special that he's been able to not only possibly move past Harrison, but be so much higher than even a Justin Jefferson was just a few years ago?
Yeah, Jefferson, Chase, Landry, Beckham, Josh Reed, Michael Clayton, Dwayne Bowe, Brandon LaFell. I mean, it's been an amazing run of wide receivers here in Baton Rouge, and none of those guys caught as many footballs or had as many receiving yards as Malik Nabers at LSU. He's the all-time leader in both, and he'll be a really good NFL player. He's not 6'5 or 6'4. He's closer to 6'1, 6'2. He's got elite breakaway speed, and the most fun thing to watch with Malik Nabers is after he catches the ball, he's as good as there is beginning the run after the catch process and creating extra yards. He's sensational in that part of the game. He's also got great body control. I'm sure they'll show a bunch of highlights tonight. He does an incredible job of high-pointing balls and contorting his body. Jaden Daniels loved to trust him one-on-one down the sidelines and up the seams, and I think he'll bring that to the NFL game as well. And he's just a complete receiver, but for the fact that he's not 6'4", but you don't have to be 6'4 these days. He's going to be plenty productive with whoever takes him early in the first round tonight.
Brian Thomas, I saw you on your social media said you think maybe there's a Brian Thomas to Cincinnati, keep that LSU connection that's worked so well for them, keep it going as a possibility. I've seen more people, though, at least have some questions about Thomas. For example, that maybe he was dominating against some teams, but maybe against the very best they were able to control him. In your mind, is that a fair criticism?
You know, I don't know. I think oftentimes he was looking to the number two corner, which is a fair thing to say. I think Malik took a little bit more. But the fact remains that Brian Thomas is all of 6'3". He's all of 210 pounds. He ran a 4.33, which is the second fastest time of anybody. So as far as measurables, you can't do really any better than that. And then you look at the production, and he led the NCAA in touchdown catches this past year. So he was a highly rated high school recruit. He was a super productive college player, and all his measurables are fantastic. So, again, if you're just looking for a nitpick here or there, yeah, potentially he was looking at some number two corners, but that's a guy that I would absolutely feel comfortable with taking late in the first round because he's got everything you would need in the modern receiver, and we know that the game is pitch and catch now. So I think there have been whispers, and I can't substantiate them at all, that the medical may not have been perfect. Again, that's just everything at this point can be a smokescreen. I don't know. But we'll see. The Vegas line on Brian Thomas has dipped a little bit, so we'll see what happens tonight.
One other guy I want to ask you about before we switch gears to this year's team. Mason Smith's a guy that at one point obviously was expected to be the next superstar defensive tackle at LSU, got hurt a couple of years ago, did not feel like he was able to get back maybe to the level of player people were prepared for him to be this past season. Where's the buzz on him? What's the thought about where he is and what kind of prospect he's going to be?
So he's actually the antithesis of Brian Thomas in that way because you look at the film and there's just not a lot. He didn't play a ton as a freshman, as a defensive lineman, very few do. He got hurt on the first drive of the game against Florida State as a sophomore and didn't play the whole year with a torn ACL. And then he didn't have a ton of production on a really bad defense this past year. He just didn't do a ton. And then you look at the medical. As I mentioned, he's been hurt twice in his LSU career. So that's probably a red flag against him. So no production, the tape's not awesome, and his medical may not be great. But he is 6'5", he's 3'10", and when he's healthy, he can really move. And there just aren't a lot of that aren't that many humans on Earth that can do that. So while when he declared, I said, this feels like a mistake because it seems like that's a guy that has potential to be a high-round pick, but there's no real reason to take him that way based on what he did at LSU. Maybe he's like a fifth or sixth rounder, I don't know. And now all of a sudden a lot of people think that he may be creeping into the second round just based on the ridiculous size and measurables that he's got. So that'll be a very fascinating case. If you told me he went with the 41st pick, okay. If you told me he went at the end of the fourth round, I'd be like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense too. there's just a lot of variance on where you could go with Mason Smith.
I'm Palmer with us for a couple more minutes here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Heath in for Chuck today. All right, so Hunt, the current team, C.J. West was a pretty immediate name that came up for them as someone to try and address the defensive tackle needs, a young man out of Kent State who has not as of yet committed to them or anybody else, but is clearly heavily sought after. There was a lot of thought that LSU needed to get some beef out of the portal. The kid from UCLA that a lot of people thought was going to be a high-profile addition for somebody decided to stay put. It doesn't feel like there are as many of these bodies maybe as some people thought there would be in the portal. How big a concern is it for them? Can they get what they need, you think, based on at least what we know right now has gone to the portal or what's rumored to be going in?
They can. It's just a matter of will they. C.J. West is a name you mentioned out of Kent State. They're looking at Michigan State at a defensive tackle there, at TCU for a defensive tackle there. Phillip Liddy was at Indiana that they had in for a visit, and he's committed to Auburn. They've got about five guys on the board right now that they have had in for visits, defensive tackle. And the question is, can they close? And they really need to close on two, because there was the thought that it was possible for Mekhi Wingo and Mason Smith to come back. Both of them left to go to the NFL draft. So they've really got like three scholarship bodies at defensive tackle right now. One's a true freshman and two have been career backups in the SEC. So it's without question the biggest need on the board for LSU. There isn't even a close second at all. I mean, it's defensive tackle or nothing. Brian Kelly went as far as to say that, because after the spring game, they said, is there anywhere else in the portal that y'all are looking? He said, no, it's just defensive tackle. That's it. So that's where they are. They've just got a couple of weeks to make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, he's done everything other than, like, fly the blimp over somebody's stadium during their spring game this weekend to say, you know, LSU needs DTs. Come talk to me. But at the same time, you've got to be able to get it done. What happens if, for whatever reason, they can't land top? I'm sure they will find some human being capable of playing the position. But let's say they can't land one of the five best that are available. I mean, can they function with what they have if they can't get one of those kind of talents?
I don't think so. I just think it's going to be too easy for teams to turn around and hand the ball off and chew up yardage against a front that's just simply outmanned. And what they've got on campus right now will be outmanned almost every Saturday in the SEC. Not to say that the guys they have on campus can't play at all, but to ask them to play 12 snaps or 74 snaps is a completely different story. They got to bring in the guy who can play 74. And right now it's not there. It's a good thing that they have options. It's not like the store's closed, but it's got to happen. And, you know, at this point in time, I don't have any details on this, but I think we all understand how the climate of things works. Like, you got to find the NIL money. And I think that it's not like they're having to split it and see we're going to use some here at running back, some here at tight end, and a couple here defensive tackle. Now, like, they're putting the pot together and say, hey, defensive tackles, come over here. And that's what they've got to get done.
We'll see whether they can, because, again, as you said it, he put it out there in a very explicit way. This is what we need. It's just you got to have the supply when you've got the demand. And right now, everybody's looking for defensive tackles. Hunt Palmer, you can check him out 1-3 on 104.5 ESPN in Baton Rouge, one of the best sports stations in this country. Appreciate it, Hunt. Thanks for making the time, man.
Absolutely, Heath. You bet.
There you go. Appreciate him checking in on the Chuck Oliver Show again. Busy night down there for sure for them with all the kids that are going to go first round, probably three minimum, and some other big names certainly in the draft this weekend. But I will be fascinated to see for a guy like C.J. West. You're talking about a guy who played at Kent State. Remember at the beginning of the show, I was talking about this idea that you've got these players. If you're a good enough player now that maybe you could be on an NFL draft board from the MAC, you're not going to be in the MAC. You're going to be somewhere like the SEC, but there's just so many schools looking. I saw a CBS Sports breakdown of the top 10 teams and what do they need, and more than half the teams in the first 10 picks, or the first 10 in their rankings, more than half of them, the only thing they had them needing as their primary need was defensive tackle. And that's just top 10. That's not including schools outside of that. Everybody's looking for beef right now. All right, coming up, a little bit of news on the legal front from the Florida side of things in the never-ending FSU-ACC struggle. We explain coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
You can't take these young, talented, but mechanically flawed quarterbacks and just play them right away, because the data isn't just, well, young quarterbacks struggle. No, it's the young quarterbacks that are mechanically flawed that struggle early on and more often than not fail in the NFL.
That is the voice of Dan Orlovsky, and more than any other quarterback, the guy they're talking about that fits that description this year is Drake May. May has the physical size and a good enough arm, and at times has shown a knack for touch that you say he could be a great player. But the NFL looks at his footwork in particular. There's other things, but the footwork is the big thing. And they say, that's a mess. If you throw him out there right at the start with footwork that's already a mess, what are the odds that he's going to be able to simultaneously focus on improving that while also trying to read NFL defenses and do so for a team that's probably not very good based on where a Drake May is expected to be drafted? More than any other prospect in this draft at the quarterback spot, that's the guy they're focused on. But there are other players that have questions too. And I think if you're Drake May, the very best scenario for you is probably to go to the Patriots at three and not play. Because if you look, the Patriots, a lot of people at three are wondering, will the Patriots do a deal? Will they do a deal with the Vikings, for example, who might want to come get a quarterback? What will happen? But the Patriots signed Jacoby Brissett to be that starting quarterback for at least a portion of this year. No one thinks Jacoby Brissett is their long-term answer at quarterback, but he's there to be a guy who's played in games, knows how to be a starter, fill the void for now, while a young quarterback has some time to learn and develop. And I think if Drake May goes there, we'll have to see what the Patriots are in the future. Again, this is a team in transition. This is an organization that's completely taking a different approach to things than they did for the last 20 plus years. But if they have competent coaching around him, there's no reason he can't be an excellent player. If he can get that Patrick Mahomes basically borderline redshirt year. Remember, Mahomes did not start a game until the last game of his first season in the NFL. If he can get something like that, even if it's not a full year, maybe it's till Thanksgiving, say, I think he could be a pretty nice player. If he goes somewhere like Washington and they throw him on the field right away, it might not be so good. So I hope for all these guys tonight that they wind up in the best possible situations for them, and they are not all equal, not even close. A guy like Josh Rosen might not have succeeded regardless. We'll never know. But him going to the Cardinals with a first-year head coach who was a defensive-minded head coach and clearly did not have the right structure to develop a younger quarterback, him going there and then them firing that coach after 1 year, changing to a different guy in Cliff Kingsbury who wanted to run a different scheme and did not like Rosen as his quarterback, that guy basically had no shot. Maybe he would have failed no matter where he went, but he went somewhere where he basically had no shot. Justin Fields with the Bears. If the Bears tried to screw him up, they couldn't have done a worse job than what they did, putting him with a coach who didn't want him in year one. The coach makes no effort to adjust his system to fit him at all. They fire that coach after year one, bring in a different coordinator in year two. All the way around, it was a very, very poorly done job. So I hope for these guys they all get a good spot. The history says very little chance they will. All right, so one quick note that I do want to mention. The folks at FSU have had another lawsuit filed on their behalf today. This one's been filed, though, not by them, but instead by the Florida Attorney General. Her name is Ashley Moody, and she has filed a lawsuit asking the judge to force the ACC to turn over their media rights contracts. Basically, the argument is this is something that involves the state of Florida and a university in the state of Florida. Under Florida laws, this would be required to be disclosed under the state sunshine laws. We want those contracts and we want them public. The ACC has said, of course, we are based in North Carolina, not Florida. Our contracts contain trade secrets. We do not need those out for the whole public and our competitors to know about. We need to keep these private. You have the ability to see the documents. FSU can see them anytime they want. They are not allowed to take copies of them with them. And she is suing and maintaining that they should be able to get copies and that those copies should be distributed to anybody who wants to see them, because under Florida law, that's how it should be. I am not a legal expert, of course. I have no idea whether this will win, but it's another front opening on the never-ending saga of billable hours between these two sides. All right, coming up, we will have more from the Duncan Newsmaker line. On the Duncan Jones Newsmaker line, we will check in with Jana Bardal from The Athletic. That is straight ahead here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.